This is Bootstrapped Web. Welcome. We're back at it. It is December, getting towards the end of the year through the holidays. Jordan, how's it going, buddy?
What's up, Brian? Good to talk with you. That's right. We're right in between the Thanksgiving and holidays. It's like a quick few weeks that just disappear on you, but one last chance to get a few things done before the holidays, New Year's.
You know, we're getting close to the end of the year. In our circles, there's always like the 2017 recaps, and we're starting to make big things happen for 2018. I always try to make December, I usually kind of step away from my main projects to focus on something like a side project. Typically, that's the productized course. I'll talk more about that, but that's going to be my focus in this coming month. So I'm excited to kind of shift gears for just a couple weeks.
Yeah, I hear you. And all the stuff that happens around the end of the year, you know, it's making me just kind of think back on the year. I know like one of the big things on my mind is writing my investor update. So that's always like a trip because it makes you look back further. It's not like what's happened since the last time I wrote an update, what happened in the past month. It makes you look back since what happened, you know, over the past 12 months. And that's a very different perspective that has been helping me feel like calmer, more grateful. You know, a year ago, it was four of us. And now there's...
Oh, yeah. You guys grew the team a lot this year.
Yeah, we went from four. We're 12 now.
Wow.
So now we have like a holiday party here in Portland. There's a holiday party happening in Slovenia with like five of them over there. You know, there are like just a bunch of people who like rely on the company for their salary, for them and their families. And people are like moving closer to Portland. It's just kind of it's a trip. It feels good. So it's helping me get some perspective on like, all right, bud, you're not completely where you want to be yet, but you should be happy with the performance, you know, of the team and the company overall for the past year. It's just kind of giving me a calmer feeling overall.
Yeah, maybe we'll do a more dedicated year-end or new year episode in a couple of weeks, but I'm thinking a lot about how this year has just been such a roller coaster on my end. It really started out in a pretty tough situation just overall in the business, and then had to kind of dig out of a downturn, then it went back up and plateaued, and then now it's actually coming into a pretty strong end of the year, which is exciting. But yeah, it's been an interesting year for sure.
Yeah. Well, the saying, right, as a parent that you hear is that the days are long and the years are short. And
yeah,
in business, it almost feels like the opposite, like the day, the weeks just freaking fly by. But then the year, like, oh, wow, that's a lot of stuff we did and went through and dealt with and learned.
So what's on the agenda today? What do you got?
I've got a few things. Some of the new hires have been interesting, just the growth and the number of people and the challenges that have come with that and making sure that people have like direct connections and that I have direct connections and doing one-on-ones. And so all those dynamics are totally new to me. So I'm not good at it. So I've just been starting to read up on things, how to talk to employees, how to treat people, how to not make assumptions based on how you would want things. You should really ask them how they want things instead of just assuming. So all this stuff is new. So it feels a little scary because you know, I just haven't done it before. I'm not good at it. That's been on my mind. Some marketing stuff. A lot of our focus over the past month has been on tech, and the tech team went from two, they're five now. There'll be six in a few weeks. So that has gotten more complicated. The need for structure, for scoping things out, for process has just increased dramatically. And it feels like the stakes are just, they're just higher. So it's a lot of pressure on everybody. Yeah. And the coordination between the support team and the tech team now is like super critical because everyone needs to know what's happening, right? It's not cool to like do an update and the support team isn't aware of it. And then all of a sudden they get people asking questions, they don't have their info. So we're starting to write a lot of the documents down and okay, what happens when we have planned downtime? Here are the steps. What happens when we have unplanned downtime? These are the steps. You know, looking back at the year, one of the cooler like metrics that I look at is in January, we were processing $5,000 a day. And this past weekend, you know, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, we processed $1 million a day.
Wow.
So like 5K to a million, like that.
That's amazing.
You know, so like all the stuff that went with that, the AWS, it's just been an amazing learning curve, like under fire.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. That's awesome. Today is the last day of my week-long Productize Black Friday sale. And this is also for the first time I'm actually closing down Productize today. I'm going to be shutting it down to new people until early 2018, when I'll be launching a completely 100% rebuild of the entire course, the entire product and everything that goes with it. I'll be spending the next month or so working on that full time, and I'm excited to get that rolling. But then the other update is I'm also now finishing up a major just sprint. I've been talking about it in the last few episodes, but I'm really near the end of this whole process. I guess it's been about a 2-month process of just, we are just cranking. I keep saying that, but we've been really every single week pushing new significant features into Ops Calendar. And this past week, like after Thanksgiving, right up until today, today's December 1st, I know that I'm dedicating December to productize. So I wanted to kind of wrap up all these little loose ends in Ops Calendar this past week, like the little things, like, you know, onboarding videos and you know, just little bugs and just making the user experience pretty solid. My developers will continue on it in December, but I'm going to kind of shift gears for a few weeks, but then really hit the ground running on Ops Calendar in 2018 pretty hard. So
I wanted to ask a lot of questions.
Yeah.
But that's cool. We'll get into it. Yeah, we just started using app queues. We're trying to figure a bunch of stuff out. And I want to ask you about your development process and QA and how that fits in. I've been educating myself for the past few weeks as we start to like relook at our process for next year. I'd like to hear how you're doing it too.
Cool. The big difference is that you have a lot of active users and we have very few. So we can break things and it's not as big a deal as it is for you. But
yeah, I guess to an extent, I think it's still a mindset and a process. And like, if everything's a trade-off, where are you putting the emphasis? Is it on speed? Is it on stability? Right? Are you going to go fast and break stuff, or are you going to go slow and be safer?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like making that a conscious choice sounds like it should be a conscious choice, not just something that happens accidentally.
But let's kind of dive into that, I guess, the second half of this episode.
Cool.
I mean, just real quick, the one update I have on Productize is this Black Friday sale. There is something about Black Friday that is unique, I think. It is a frenzy. It's a frenzy, you know, and I'm on these email lists for all these people we know who sell products.
I bought some stuff.
What did I buy? I actually didn't really buy much, to be honest.
I just waited for Marine Layer and Bonobos. And as soon as I got those, I actually preloaded my cart. I did shopping ahead of time and then just sat there and waited.
Yeah, I did buy an Amazon Fire Stick TV.
I was
getting sick of the Apple TV thing for a little while, so I'm going
to
try that.
I switched from Roku to Apple TV, and now I'm really pissed because Apple TV doesn't have Amazon. I'm like, guys, can you...
I know, that's why I switched to Amazon.
Now we have Roku and it, and at least the Apple TV works really well with your phone, so I can watch Mind of a Chef, which is just on Facebook now, which is so awkward, but at least it works on the TV.
Just the Apple TV remote. So we like the newer one that's like the touchscreen stupid thing. And like, that was just killing me. Like, you know, like we'd constantly like accidentally pause the show, whatever.
All right. So let's, can we dig in a second? Yeah. So I got your emails and they were good. It's great when you have the benefit of marketing talk being honest instead of like this weird fluff. You're like, no, I'm closing it down. I really am.
And actually, this is the very first time that I've closed it. It's been open, available for anyone to go to the website and buy since the day that I launched it back in 2014. And I was on the fence about this. I wasn't sure that I was going to do it this way. I was like, you know, I don't even know how long it's going to take me to build the new course. Like, I don't want it to be closed for that long.
Yeah.
So there are a few different benefits. And this is all closed now that you're listening to this. But anybody who has ever bought Productize, including folks who buy it this past week, get grandfathered into lifetime access to all the new stuff. So like nobody who's ever bought it before will have to buy the new course next year. Because I've always made that promise, I'm certainly going to honor that. There is going to be some new stuff, like the community. I'm going to add like a private Slack group and have like guests come in all year long. And they're going to get lifetime access to that. Whereas new folks next year, that's going to be more of a, like an annual subscription type of membership thing.
Okay.
And I mean, prices will be raising next year as well. So the deal this week was like, not only was it 30% off, but it's also much less than what the regular price is next
week. Right.
So I think a combination of all those factors, plus just people who've been on my list for a while, who've been kind of thinking about Productize and, you know, haven't pulled the trigger. I think I don't feel comfortable sharing real numbers here, but I will say that this has been, I believe it's been the biggest spike in revenue ever for Productize, and way beyond expectations. I mean,
awesome.
I think quadruple what I honestly expected. This past year, 2017, you guys know I've been really focused on audience ops, really focused on ops calendar, and really not so focused on coming out with new content on my personal site and actively growing my personal email list. It grew naturally a little bit, but really not much growth there in terms of new subscribers. So I was kind of assuming that this would be a pretty quiet Black Friday year, and I was mistaken, you know.
Merry Christmas.
So it also really reinforces for me that this problem and this concept, this business model for freelancers and consultants who are looking to, you know, my path that I took,
right,
to kind of graduate from billing by the hour to really owning a business and growing something that's not just your time, and transitioning and bridging into other products, you know, Productize services. That's the thing that I've kind of gone back to again and again. And that's what this really confirms, that it just really resonates with my audience. And it justifies me taking a month off all my other stuff to focus on Productize for the next month.
That helps. And now that it's closed, you have more motivation to get it done faster also.
Yeah. So
now here's the question I have for you. I know Black Friday is like an aberration. It's not an everyday event. However, I think that the dynamics behind Black Friday, the scarcity, the timing, the sale, I think those can be recreated. Those dynamics, maybe not to the same height. So where my brain goes is, well, I don't know if you should have this open all the time.
And that's my thinking for 2018. That is the plan. I'm not going to open it.
So you go through a funnel, you get an offer, and then you don't have that offer forever.
Yeah, even that I've been on the fence about, but I've basically decided now that it's not going to have a quote unquote public launch date. I'm just going to start doing launches once or twice a month.
Okay.
Maybe even less frequently than that, depending on how busy I am with other stuff. But I'm not even going to go straight to like an automated thing or maybe not ever. It's really just going to be real live webinars, like a couple times a quarter. And there's going to be, you come to the website at any time, you get on the waiting list. And
right, can opt in to the next time you get on the list, and then you'll get notification next time there's a webinar.
That's the plan.
I like it. I mean, it sounds like it's a good situation for an evergreen funnel with the deadline, but not at first.
I think with the new course, and I'm going to create an all new webinar, I'm going to redesign all of my backend drip automations to support all the new models and everything. And so I really want to optimize it and do it live probably for several months before I put anything on autopilot. The whole idea of closing it and having a deadline where that's literally the last chance to buy it, which is today in this deal. I've done deals that do expire. I've done urgency or scarcity in the past where it's like this discount will go away after today, but it's still available. But I think this is really opening my eyes to, like, literally when you close the cart, it just drives so many more sales, you know?
Yeah. We see it even in the physical product world, we see product launches, and we see these big spikes that for merchants who really know how to do it. It works everywhere.
One hesitation that I've had about going with this model in 2018 is that I know, just looking at the data, that people have gone straight to my website and purchased Productize. Some of them without even being on my email list, but others just join my email list today and buy by the end of the week. That could speak to the fact that it's not a super expensive program, but it's like, I wonder about the trade-off there, but I think the scarcity outweighs it.
My guess would be also, I mean, you could try it out for a few months, but my guess is that the increase in getting people to make that commitment based on, you know, seeing it and kind of like reaching a crescendo. I don't know what that word is. and like, you know, make the time to make a decision for your business type of thing.
Yeah, and I think it'll be much easier to run ads to webinars and really measure what's working and what's actually not, and in like a 1 week span, you know.
Yep.
So,
amen.
I've been hesitant to go this route, but now I'm going where I'm really going to put most of my marketing energy into grow my list and sell productize. And that's the starting point. That's the top of the products that I'm running. And eventually people in my audience or people who know this type of stuff eventually make their way to audience ops and ops calendar. I mean, those will have their own marketing engines as well, but I shouldn't ignore the fact that like the majority of customers still come from my audience, and I have to kind of embrace that. Whereas for the last couple of years, I haven't fully embraced that. I wanted to make these standalone engines that didn't depend on my personal stuff. And I'm just going to kind of try to embrace that more in 2018 and just put more stuff, more value, more resources, more content into that side of the thing. So
you can fight the energy in the world or you can go with it. I know I experience that all the time. If I try to push things uphill, it might feel good and heroic. And then you look back like, well, I really just didn't need to do that at all.
Right. Right.
Cool. So on my
side, yeah, over to you.
That's a beautiful update, by the way. Hell yeah. Nice work. So not surprisingly, what we've experienced is when you hire people on the sales, marketing, support, success side, immediate impact, right? So we have a head of content now. So it's super exciting. She started last week. So all of a sudden we are finally going to be investing in content. We have a lot of big plans for like thought leadership and how to espouse what we believe. And the point of that really being that we want to sell a strategy as opposed to a tool. Content is like the key to that. You can't do that just with the product. You have to put your ideas out into the world.
Yeah. Obviously, we have a lot of clients on Audience Ops who come to us to kind of like take care of that piece, to outsource it and not hire in-house. Mm-hmm. But there are plenty of folks who've been with us for a year or longer, and then they kind of decide to bring it in-house, or just other SaaS companies who go with the in-house full-time person on content. And to like double down on that with a full-time person who's just focused on all different types of content. Like you look at just what a lot of different companies are doing with like these monthly publications and really going deep into like networking and bringing guests in and like it's pretty cool. So you can do a lot of things with that.
Yeah, and it's similar to other roles in the company like our marketer Ed that started a month ago. It's all about ownership and responsibility. It's not about doing everything yourself. So she's responsible for the content. Doesn't mean she can write every word. She has like a budget for writers. And then she needs to execute the strategy and own it, as opposed to like you write everything. So it's like a mixture. So it'll still be augmented by writers. And fortunately, she has a lot of experience. So she has a lot of writers that have worked for her before and so on. So something like that is exciting. And it's a relatively quick impact. Maybe content takes a long time, but all of a sudden we start getting content out. We have a customer success manager coming on board in 2 weeks. That's like immediate. The other side.
I'm curious about that. What is the success? Where does a new customer success person start at the company? Like, what are they doing?
Yes. So this has been interesting for us because we have not had a lot of trouble getting people to sign up. But where we need more work is getting people to be successful with the product, use it, be successful with it, get good ROI from it, and keep paying for it. We know that that is one of like the key focal points of the company. Right? Makes sense for a SaaS. So thus far, we've had a customer success person on it, but he hasn't had that much experience in customer success. He's kind of just game and awesome and creative and a good communicator and everything, but he doesn't have like the discipline of customer success. So we were trying to figure out what to do. Should we bring in a consultant and help us create a customer success process? What we ended up doing was hiring someone here in Portland who has that discipline, that 5-6 years of experience of growing customer success team, segmenting VIP versus non-VIP customers, identifying how to measure things so that you can improve things. So that's who we're bringing in. So her job is really to first take a look at what we have, learn the customers, learn the market, learn the product, and then start to understand, okay, what do people seek when they're signing up? What defines a successful trial? What defines a successful experience with the product overall? Which features do people want that matter the most? So it's a tough role because you're sitting between support, success, marketing, tech. It requires a lot of.
I would think there's a lot of with marketing. You know, the customer success person figuring out like who is the most successful with this product.
Yes,
talking to marketing, like how do we get more of those people
in? Yes, and so it's like that's why we did our best to get someone here in Portland.
Yeah,
because I want the person in charge of marketing, person in charge of success, person in charge of support, sitting within 10 feet of each other. Because that communication, those little insights, you know, that like Matt on the success team like does a demo. So we've built out a process. We should dig into it in one of these episodes, actually, because we just kind of banged our head up against the wall to learn. Maybe it'll make sense to bring Emily in and then see where our process evolves and then talk about it.
Yeah, cool.
So we have a segment, right? We have a parameter that we say, okay, if you have done over X amount of revenue in your Shopify store in the past 30 days, we put you on a VIP track. And part of that VIP track is an automated email that goes out, hey, you've qualified for our VIP program. We'd love to set you up with a call, an appointment. We try to position it as valuable with someone on our success team. And a lot of those people like that, so they sign up for it. So those demos are really, really interesting. It's people who have already signed up, and all of a sudden they tell us what they're really looking for. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like we're capturing them before they look at the product and say, oh, it's not quite what I thought it was or what I wanted, or it's missing this thing. So it gives us an opportunity to like show them how to accomplish what they're actually trying to do.
Nice.
So when Matt walks back into the room, he's carrying with him like insight directly from the customer. And he talks right to Ed on marketing. And Ed is like, oh, that's interesting that they wanted to do this. We've heard that multiple times. We should put that out front on the site. We should highlight that integration. We should write content about that.
Do you guys record those calls?
We do record them. We don't really go back very often, but they are recorded by, you know, just automatically in Zoom.
Very cool.
Yeah. So things like that. So what I'm talking about is the customer side of things, marketing, sales, support, success. Mm-hmm. The engineering side, totally different story. You add someone there and it's like, it's not immediate. It's actually negative impact at first because of the onboarding. So we went from 2 to 3 and added a backend developer, which has been very helpful. And now we just added 2 more, another backend and a front end developer. It's forced on us a stronger focus on process, on a little bit of hierarchy, on who's the boss. When the boss tells you that you need to write out a full spec before starting to code, like you have to do that. It's not like optional anymore. You know, when it was 2 of them, it was like this. Is more loose.
Yeah. It's just like, that's a chore, but this is now it's like those specs actually matter because more people rely on them.
Exactly right. So it's helped. And I do wish that we had been more strict on it. I see that as mostly my fault because I pushed speed and I knew some of the trade-offs and I didn't appreciate how powerful the trade-offs were.
Yep.
So now we are, you know, we're confronting it now, and it's a little difficult to confront when we're this far along, but there's no choice.
Cool. Well, I guess on that note, I guess we can talk about development.
Yeah. So I'll tell you like what our problem has been, like our exploration. And then I want to hear how you do it and what you hear about other people. So one of the things that we kind of came to terms with was that it's been painful to have responsibility for the tech in New York. And then the tech actually happening in Slovenia. And we want Ben to be able to focus more on product than tech. We've taken that opportunity to say, okay, if we're going to make this type of responsibility transition, let's look at our process. Let's take the opportunity as we're like, you know, shaking things up to re-examine what we're doing and think about if this is the right way to do it. So a lot of that has come with me, like today I have lunch with someone here in Portland who's really experienced as a CTO and is now running a product that helps like CTOs and executives understand what's happening in their tech team, velocity and speed and bugs per line of code and all that. So I've just been talking to a bunch of people about, given our situation, what's the best way to set this up? We have had outside QA, and then we've come across test-driven development, something I'm really just learning about now in terms of putting the responsibility of writing automated tests on the developer that's creating the feature right then. And then things don't get released until that it passes those tests. And so it reduces the need for QA, but it makes things slower. So all these different things, like what I heard the other day kind of blew my mind. Someone was telling me that Shopify right? That's the platform we work on. So we look up to them, right? Shopify has no QA. And in my mind, I'm like, I don't understand. That's a gigantic software company. How do they not have QA? And that's right. That's when
they just rely on completely automated unit tests.
Yes. And that's when I like kind of first heard, I knew about automated tests. I knew about the concept, but I didn't click it together. Like, I don't understand how they cannot have QA. And I finally saw it in that context. Like, you can do QA almost ahead of time or alongside it as opposed to after.
We're in a much different phase than you are. I think we're still very much in the...
But you're creating your habits now.
Yeah. But so like automated tests, like we are way, way behind the curve on that. And bugs pop up all the time. And I'm the one who does the QA. I'm head of product. I'm doing design. I'm doing front end. And my two developers are doing the back... three developers are doing the back end work. I do some raw design. I write up the specs. I give it to them. They knock it out. They put it on staging for me to review. I test it. I'm saying this works, this works, this doesn't work. And then I send it back to them. They fix it. And then we push it live. Or no, I test it again. And then we push it live. And right. and then it's like, oh, by the way, this thing that was working fine for the last 2 months. Yeah, that just broke. Why did that one? So like that happens all the time. And that's definitely... because we don't have the coverage in the automated test built out. And the reason for that is because I have absolutely 100% prioritized speed. Like
I hear you.
On that all the time. Every single week, I'm like, guys, speed. What can we ship this week?
Yes.
Like, and by like Sunday night or Monday morning, I'm like, all right, guys, these are the things that like I gave you everything you need. They're good to go. I'll just tell them flat out. I'm like, look, I'm hoping to test these by Tuesday or Wednesday so that we can ship it live by Thursday and then really be done with it by Friday.
Right.
And like, and that happens every single week. Okay. So I know for a fact that our tech is not as optimized and bulletproof as it could be. There's no possible way this very early version one can be that. But again, like I prioritized speed because I can't spend 3 years on this. I've already spent one full year on this, you know, and it's still not, and this is, you know, partly the marketing that hasn't really gone up to full speed ahead yet, but I can't self-fund perfecting every line of code. I like right now the priority is speed. And as we move forward and as the revenue justifies the investment, then it's like, okay, we go back and improve our process and improve our code. And that's how I kind of laid out the priorities.
So I'm currently in a conversation with myself 12 months ago. that's really what it is. It's, I wouldn't do things differently, but this is what's going to happen as a bootstrap company and right. All the resources are precious.
I have to kind of clarify something though, because okay. I see this a lot. Like people talk about MVPs and people talk about like move fast and break things. And like your first version doesn't have to be perfect and you could ship without all your key features.
Right. See if people want it first. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So all that is true. And I think I'm beyond like the total MVP rough stage, but I'm before like scale.
Yep.
You know? I still have a very high standard for what I want to put in front of customers.
There's a difference in what they see and experience compared to the consistency and reliability of the product that they're using and the functionality.
Like there are things in Ops Calendar right now that just are slow to like load the page. Like the page load is very slow. Okay. And that's because I know that our underlying infrastructure is not as optimal as it can be.
Right.
But the user experience and the way that I've designed the features and the interface, like that is as pixel perfect as I can make it. I actually want to do a video at some point about some of the user experience decisions, like how I get the user from zero to actively using the product as fast as possible by like pre-creating things for the user and all this stuff. But like you can kind of like leapfrog with user experience and design and make the app really easy and productive for the user. Like you don't have to cut corners on that side, and you can still ship a perfectly usable functional product that will improve over time. And I think the other thing that I want to get across is that like the developers that I'm working with are top-notch, really solid developers. They're not hacks.
Right. So they have their standards too.
Yeah, like just any code that they ship is adhering to general best practices for Laravel and Vue and you know, infrastructure and all that and security. But they do know that like at this phase, it's about speed. So if a certain requirement that I'm giving them is super complex, I told them like, just stop, let's talk about it. Maybe we can find a better way to do it faster.
Don't spend 3 weeks on one thing.
Yeah. There are these trade-offs, but I think it's still important that in like a version one phase, you can still have very high standards for what you put in front of the customer. And in terms of like what's actually usable and what's just like, this is not a usable product.
Yeah. I had a lot of trouble dealing with that in our version one. I was just perpetually not happy. So it didn't meet my standards for the first like 6 months. And I would just look at the app every day and be like, that makes no sense why it says that. It shouldn't say that. It should be here and it should say something else. I had to really just swallow that because the tech team was like, if you want us to do admin changes, we can do it forever. Like we just need to redo the admin when we're ready. And then that took longer. So it was tough to be okay with not meeting my own standards. That was rough. You know, a lot of it depends on the nature of the product. For us, the only thing that mattered in those first 6 months was reliability of the checkout. As long as the checkout worked, nobody cared at all what it said on the admin or how it looked or if the button was in the wrong place or the wrong color or anything. The checkout had to work. We were doing trade-offs all over the place. We're doing trade-offs towards speed, but we had to do reliability. So like something was going to pay the price. And that was like design and UX. We just couldn't do all three with a team of two engineers.
I think in my case, like I'm doing all the design and the front end. And as the founder and the product owner, I'm driven to move as fast as I possibly can, especially because I'm self-funding and bootstrapping. And so that adds an extra pressure of like every single day that I have developers working on this, that's coming out of my pocket. The sooner we could ship more features, that's key. The front end side of things like that forces me to like wake up 6 a.m., get to the computer, ship front end code so that my guys can get to it during this overlap in time zone. I give them everything they possibly need to run with for the week ahead.
Right. Like you're not going to be the bottleneck.
I will not be the bottleneck.
Yes.
You know, like, and that's for the past 2 months, like that's my number one priority every single day for the last 2 months is like, do the developers have things that they should be making progress on so that they're not waiting on anything. And that's it, been it, you know?
You know, when you hear entrepreneurs let's say have exited, they've sold their business and then people ask, well, what are you going to do next? And they come back with, I don't know if I can do that again.
Right.
Hearing you describe that, I look back affectionately at that time, but I do not want to do that again.
Yeah.
It's a crazy like frenzied state. It's very exciting, but it's high stakes, man. It's high stress.
This is some of the most enjoyable work that I've done in years, just the last 2 months, because I'm designing, I'm working on product.
I'm creating
a tool that I personally use every day and that my team uses, that customers are using. That's super exciting to like design and make a software product. That's awesome. But the stressful part about it is that just knowing that me getting to do this enjoyable work is costing me all this money for making a product that is not earning enough revenue to necessarily justify all that. Like
if it didn't have that piece of the creativity and the creation, right, it wouldn't be as fulfilling. If it didn't have the pressure of reality, it would be masturbation, for a better word.
Yeah.
Right. You're just creating stuff.
Right. Right. And we have some customers, so it's not like one of these all too common situations where you spend 2-3 years working on an app that you haven't even shown it to anyone. Like you can go to the website now and sign up for it and use
it. People use it.
What stresses me is that like, because I'm so involved in product development every day and because I've got other things going on in my business, I would love for it to be, have product and marketing working together. And they're just not. Like marketing is on hold, kind of. Like we're doing some content. I've started some SEO kind of work, But the active outbound sales and marketing funnels and advertising, all of that, I have yet to press go on.
Yeah, that's...
And that's, it's stressful. Like what I would love in an ideal world is for those two to be working hand in hand. Like I was listening to a really great episode of...
Instead of one or the other.
Yeah, Drift, Seeking Wisdom podcast, their okay. podcast.
Yeah.
A couple weeks back, they had a really great episode. I think they brought in... if not the CTO, like somebody on the engineering team at Drift came onto their episode and they talked about this concept of, they kind of talk about it like they're launching a new thing every month. Every month they are launching something new, like an entirely new product. But I think really what they meant was like a big new feature in Drift every single month.
Right.
But the way that they talked about it was that like engineering and product is completely in sync with marketing. And so when they start developing the new feature that they're launching, marketing is already start getting the wheels in motion on the blog post and the newsletter and the promotion and how they're gonna leverage this into more exposure. And so the day that the feature goes live, marketing is boom, ready to go. You know, and like that's and that's what's kind of been frustrating me right now about like Ops Calendar. We've launched like so many awesome features in the last 2 months. Like we just came out with like this Chrome extension. We got search. We've got like user permissions now. We've got like custom content types, custom checklist type, like all this stuff that like nobody really knows about. You know, like a few users know about it, but like because I haven't had the marketing material, the marketing assets, and the announcements lined up with these product releases. So like,
yes,
in the next few weeks, I feel like I'm going to be playing catch up.
You don't get the benefit, man. It doesn't compound.
Yeah. Right, right. Yep. In the next few weeks and months, I'm going to be playing catch up on like announcing all these features that we've actually shipped.
Yes. Like so the way we've tried to look at that, because we did the exact same thing. We would launch these huge updates and huge features and integrations, and then literally wouldn't even send an email out to the email list.
Yeah.
What we've done is we just ignore the timing. Like we just identify, okay, we have a recharge integration. Let's just launch it whenever we want to. So it's like, so what if it happened 6 months ago? Whatever. Let's just make a big deal of like, it and show it how to use it. And then it's there. And some people will get it in real time. And then everyone else after that won't get it in real time, but it'll be there.
It's still there. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. I remember when Ed came in and when Catherine came in on the content, I basically said to them, if you don't have anything to do, there's a list of things that should already have been highlighted that haven't been. So we can just go to that well anytime. And it's exactly what you talked about. All the stuff that you're doing now, what I didn't do and I wish I did, is I just kept like a document of just the things that as you're doing them seem like a big deal. 3 months from now, they won't seem like a big deal, but really they are a big deal.
They're there. Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. That's a good idea. The other thing that I did this past week, you know, right at the end of November, heading into December, where I know I'm going to shift my gears and focus on productize, I wanted to kind of wrap up a lot of loose ends with Ops Calendar. So these loose ends are, as we launched a bunch of new features, I wanted to create a bunch of onboarding videos. I wanted to get our new user onboarding from absolutely nothing to let's at least have something to help onboard new users.
Yeah, okay. Right?
This is not what the perfect onboarding process will be, but this is a good, I think, version one of that. And that's basically, I picked out like five key things that you should accomplish when you're during your trial. Like adding something to the calendar, creating a checklist template or using the one we give you, inviting a team or your clients and customizing their permissions, scheduling some social media posts. There was one more in there. I forgot what it was. I recorded like a 5-minute video, like just a how-to, like how to do this, how to accomplish this task. I put those videos into our Help Scout documentation and, I just installed Help Scout's beacon feature.
Okay.
If you're familiar with that.
No, tell me.
You know that Help Scout has their help desk section and then they have their docs section.
Yes.
So we're using their docs system to house all of our KB docs. But then docs has this feature called beacon, which basically puts a little circle in the bottom corner of your app. You click that, it pops up your docs right in app.
Oh, like the docs that are relevant for that specific page?
You can set, you can get that fancy.
Okay.
Or if you don't do that, it just pulls up like your top docs. And then I talked to their support. I was like, how can I just specifically call out these five getting started docs? So I was able to do that. And so now users see this little beacon. They can click on it. It'll give them the five top docs with videos of how to do it. And there's also a link to send us a support email right there without leaving the app. So, I mean, that's like a really simple, like, it's not a guided tour, but it's this is how you do the key things in the app, and there are videos and they're right there embedded in the app, and it's ready to go. So this past week I recorded those videos, put that beacon in place. And so at least now, in the next few days, what I'm going to do is I'm going to open it up. So we talked about previously on a previous episode that currently if you want to sign up for Ops Calendar, you have to go to the site, fill out the form, request a demo call with me, and I'll manually onboard you. I think in the next few days, I'm going to actually open that up.
So that'll be interesting.
Anybody can go and sign up for a free trial.
And what we've done with that is we make the offer of the demo after you sign up. So if, because we see a lot of value, a lot of value in that demo, that conversation, it establishes that it's a real company, that you can reach out to people, and it just gets it out from the process of sign up. Literally in the email, hey, welcome, I'm Brian. You know, here's what, welcome to Ops Calendar. I'd love to talk with you and help you get set up. Bang.
I'm glad you said that because I didn't think of that. Because what I was going to do was those videos, I'm also going to line up in like a typical drip onboarding email sequence for new trial users. We already have new trial users tagged in drip. So that's all set, ready to go. To pitch the demo call right there, right after they sign up for the trial.
Right. That's good. How much easier of a sell for the call? It's not like, let me try to sell you. It's let me try to help you.
Yeah.
Just very, very different. It's pretty much the same call, but from a different point of view. It's okay, you're set up. So what Matt does a lot with those VIP demos is he comes prepared to help them set up the account right then while they're on the call. He just puts them right through onboarding.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And one of the big things that we learned in our exploration on customer success, I don't recall if I talked about this on the last podcast because it was 2 weeks ago. I don't remember. But one of the biggest things we did was we separated out. Well, let me correct myself. We were doing it wrong. we were looking at the onboarding as one piece, and it's really two pieces. We looked at it as account setup, like come in, connect your Shopify store, connect your payment processor, get your account details, and then get your account fully set up in order to be able to use the app. We looked at that as onboarding. What we were ignoring was that second phase of, okay, now that your account is set up and it's functional, from there to actually processing revenue, we kind of have
activation.
Activation. We have to treat it as an entirely new process. And so instead of redesigning the admin and adding a bunch of stuff, we started using app queues. So that goes
and app queues is that like it's a tool that you can subscribe to that basically like pops in an onboarding tour?
Yes. It's like a tool tip, like an advanced tool tip tour type thing. So you can have rules. You can say the first time someone sees this page, highlight this thing. The second time someone sees this page, highlight this other thing, or maybe do them in a row or allow them to skip it. So it gives you all those options. But the key part is that it allows you to do it without code. And so we were able to do it on our own. And then all we have to do is ask the tech team to install the snippet. And then that goes live next week. So it'll be really interesting to see, at least from our point of view, ahead of time, it looks like it's going to make a big difference. Because the difference between having those and just being dropped off into that and like, okay, go figure out the logic of a new software app.
Yeah. Yeah. I think at some point I want to look at that app queues. You know, I think right now I'm more concerned with, just having the ability just to really easily send us a message or at least see some help videos. But I'm more interested in getting the messages to see like what are the most common questions.
Yeah.
And I've already had a lot of those questions just from doing a lot of calls with people, but I'm definitely more in this phase of like, don't optimize, just get enough data, you know, to figure out where to go next.
I think that's the right way to do it. The other tool that we have found very useful is Wistia. Came out with a mini product called Soapbox.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And when I first used it, I was like, this is awesome, but I can't even save the video to my Wistia account. I was confused on what the point was. But really, they just launched it early. And now it's a full product. And what it allows you to do is very easily record your screen and your webcam at the same time.
Yep.
And then after the fact, in post-production, very, very easily decide at which point in the video do you want to show the screen, your face, or both. And what that does is it gives your onboarding and support videos a little bit of personality, a little bit yeah. of, hi, I'm Aaron from the support team. And then your face disappears and it's just the screen. And I'm going to show you how to build your product funnel today. And it just helps make those connections.
Yeah. So I am a huge, huge fan of this other tool, which kind of does the same thing. They just changed their name. It used to be called viewedit.com, but now it's by this company, vidyard.com, called Go, and the product is called Go Video. It's a free tool. This came out before Wistia's thing, so I've been using it a bit longer. And then I tried Wistia's Soapbox thing, and it was a little bit slow and clunky to use compared to this. What I love about this is that it's super, super fast. It's a Chrome extension. You literally pop it open, press record. I'm talking and I'm showing my screen. And when I stop recording, I instantly have a URL to send to somebody to go watch that video right now. There's no uploading time. There's nothing. And it's like, I use that with my developers every single day. I'm like, guys, watch me replicate this bug.
Yes. So much better than documenting.
So I do it all the time. And I've been obsessed with this tool. I use it every single day.
Very nice. That's good. That's great to know. Yeah. All right, man. Look, we got to get one more in before the end of the year. We'll do a year wrap up or something. Yeah. Karaoke, or we'll come up. just sit here and drink together. That sounds like
auditory
experience. Yep.
Good stuff, buddy.
All right. Great to hear from you. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Talk to you all soon.
See you.